This is season 5 of Play Therapy Across the Lifespan. And in this season, I want to share ideas to help you create a play space that conveys to clients that this is a great place to do therapeutic work. I've invited Dr. Casey Lee to join me in the conversation, so you'll hear more than just my perspective. We've got lots of practical ideas, and even those of you who have been doing play therapy for years will get some ideas for making your play space even better. If you're a beginner, these 7 podcasts will walk you through spaces, toys, organization, and ethics. Bring your creativity. I have taught a lot of students during my dozen or so years as a professor, and before I became a professor, I spent a lot of years in school as a student myself. Often, one of the biggest concerns is finances. People often trade work hours for school hours, so in addition to the extra expenses for tuition, books, and fees, they often have a reduction of income. We believe that it is worth it, that the education is going to reap a better income later. But for now, the budget might be tight. New professionals often need to be budget conscious too, because those student loans are coming due. Throw in expensive life events like weddings and babies, and you may be wondering how to pay for a playroom. Well, I've got some ideas to help you equip your play space with quality items. This is episode 29, Funding a Playroom. You are taking your first play therapy class and you need to assemble your first play therapy kit. Or maybe you are a new professional with a blank space waiting for you to set it up. Maybe someone has approached you asking you to turn a space into a play or sand or other expressive art room. It's exciting, but it could also be intimidating to figure out how to afford everything at once. Well, honestly, it doesn't need to be all at once. Just because some items could be in your play space doesn't mean they all should be. You have time to add things later, and that is beneficial because you will know yourself and your clients better as you go. So let me divide this discussion into 2 categories: other-funded and self-funded. Sometimes you find other sources to fund or maybe partially fund your playroom and supplies. And sometimes you have to do it out of your personal resources. Let's start with other funded. This is my best piece of advice. Ask. Often there is some money available at your agency or nonprofit, even those with tight budgets or who depend on donations. It's certainly possible that you will get a no, but even if you get a small amount, it helps. Just remember that whoever paid for it keeps it when the time comes for you to move to the next job. For those of you who are students, you may automatically think that you have to bring all your own supplies, but it might be worth it to ask anyway. Offer to create a small play therapy supply kit for your site. Who knows? They might be so impressed with you that they see the value of hiring someone trained in play therapy. Maybe even you. At a minimum, they might be willing to pitch in some office supplies like copy paper, markers, glue, and organizational supplies for storage. At a preschool that I worked at, they let me use some of the sturdy toy wooden furniture like a kitchen, a cradle, a table and chairs, and a washing machine that were just in storage. That helped my budget a lot because those things would have been too expensive for me to buy. And speaking of asking, seek out grants or patrons to fund your project. Here in Nashville, our professional football team completely funded the playroom of a local agency. Go Titans! The Rotary Club in the rural county I used to work for offered small teacher grants, which I could apply for as a school counselor. A restaurant or a community agency might happily donate a couple thousand dollars for renovation, and a nice plaque commemorating their generosity is a win-win. You don't need a mega federal grant. Sometimes a few hundred dollars pays for that cool mural or the art nook, which leads me to my next point. Know what you need. Being clear about what you need means that you can ask for specific parts of your dream space. Maybe you don't get it all at once, or you need multiple patrons, but having a clear answer when someone says, "How can I help?" is important. Have a physical representation of your play space. Design your ideal space on paper or digitally. Maybe it will happen. If you are an intern who can't yet ask for a budget, this is a great time to dream and get your thoughts together about what you want after you graduate. I should warn you that several of our interns have been asked to set up playrooms at their sites, and all they had to do was pull out their ideal playroom sketches. As you dream about your ideal playroom space, it might be helpful to create a shoot-the-moon budget and a good enough budget with the essentials. So be ready with your dream ask. This is what you would love to have if money were no object. But you also want to have a more realistic budget ready with the toys you most need in each category. The basic furniture you need, that ideal family, the shelves for storage. Can I say again to not be afraid to ask? I have been surprised at how often my students and alumni have gotten all they ask for. It might be easier to think of it as being the voice for your clients. Now, let's turn to self-funding. This is what I had to do when starting out, and many of you may be doing this too. If you want or need to self-fund, then secondhand toys and furniture are great options. Secondhand furniture is often sturdier because the low-quality items already fell apart. Used toys have the added benefit of not being too pristine to play with, and it won't upset you if they get broken. You can buy used items at consignment stores, yard sales, or maybe through Facebook groups. Personally, I like supporting the missions of some of our local thrift stores, which is an extra bonus. Many people and action figures get put in bags for a dollar or two at these places. I funded my first sand tray with miniatures for less than $20 this way, including the container and sand from a home improvement store. Now, I might sound like a broken record, but ask. You can often get items for free just for putting the word out that you need something. Ask friends with kids who are quickly outgrowing some toys or changing their interest. You might even post a request on the bulletin board of your favorite coffee shop, with permission, of course. Or search on FreeCycle. These can be great options for those expensive wood dollhouses or furniture that you might just want to cover with chalkboard paint. You can also get supplies very inexpensively at dollar-type stores. These can be great for basic art supplies, bins and containers, some dress-up items, natural items for the sand tray, and office supplies. But be cautious about buying low-quality toys that won't last. Try to get the best quality you can afford because you don't want a bunch of broken toys. Worse, when a child breaks a toy, they may feel embarrassed, ashamed, or disappointed, which could impact your therapeutic relationship. Now, of course, this happens sometimes, but you want to limit it when you can. And you certainly don't want a play space filled with broken toys. What kind of message would that send? Well, those are some of my ideas, but I know Dr. Casey Lee has more to share. So let's hear from her next. This season, I have a special guest. Dr. Casey Lee is a registered play therapist supervisor, a national certified counselor, and a licensed professional counselor as a mental health service provider in Tennessee. She is also my colleague in the clinical mental health counseling program, and she's the faculty director of Lipscomb University's Center for Play Therapy and Expressive Arts. She earned both a bachelor's and a master's degree at Vanderbilt University and a doctoral degree at the University of North Texas, where she naturally specialized in play therapy, and she trained with world-renowned play therapists like Drs. Gary Landreth, Sue Bratton, and Dee Ray. Dr. Lee is also approved by the Center for Play Therapy as a trainer and supervisor for mental health professionals seeking certification as child-centered play therapist and child-parent relationship therapist. She has lots of experience and wisdom in play therapy and a heart for teaching it. This is a portion of my interview with her. Welcome back, Dr. Lee.
Thank you.
So on today's podcast, we've been talking about funding, and I know this is always a big one, especially for students and beginners who maybe don't have a lot of extra cash. Things like buying toys, buying furniture, maybe creating cool spaces, all of that requires money. And so how do people without a lot of discretionary income afford setting up their playroom?
Yeah, it doesn't always involve money. So thinking very creatively on, who has toys that they're not using. So I've worked with a lot of students in supervision who are maybe taking intro to play for the first time and building their own kit, or maybe they're setting up their playroom for the first time. And I've also worked with parents in child-parent relationship therapy, where we have them build their own kit to use at home for special playtime, where they meet one-on-one with their child, 30 minutes once a week, just using just their special play kit that they put together. And so in those situations, students and parents, they don't want to go out and spend a ton of money, versus somebody maybe who's gone into private practice and they're making a business investment, that we do need to be creative. And so I always encourage them to start with, what toys do you have access to, or family members and friends have access to that aren't being used anymore? And you want to be careful, you don't want to put your favorite toy from childhood in a playroom, because you're going to have an emotional connection to it. But thinking about what, looking around, where can I get things for free, first of all? And then also wherever you're building your space. So maybe it's in a school or maybe it's in an agency. What do they have access to that maybe they're not using anymore? So every time I've ever built a room in a school, I've always gotten furniture from them. Kitchens, some old kitchens from a kindergarten classroom, they got an upgrade, or even just the table and chair for an art table. Your furniture is your most expensive thing. And so thinking about, where can I source some of these things from that maybe I don't even have to pay anything at all. But if I can't get it for free, where can I get it cheap? So thinking about things like thrift stores, garage sales. In one of the previous episodes, we talked about, wanting the room to be really warm and inviting. And used toys really say, these toys are meant to be played with, that other children have played with these toys. And it's an invitation to come in and play with these toys. So don't feel like, that everything has to be brand new. Everything, has to come straight out of the package. That used toys have a lot of warmth to them. I really encourage, buy used first or get donations first.
And one idea I would add to that is I know that in our area, like before school starts, a lot of times there are a lot of yard sales, or churches will come together and do big community sales and things like that. And often there's some really good options for toys there.
We want to be intentional. So we don't want to say, hey, you know, if you got any toys, send them my way, that we do want to be intentional and selective about what we put into the room. And so maybe somebody gives you some things and you don't want to be ungrateful, but maybe you pass them along to somebody who can use them in another way, not necessarily in your playroom. When I approach shopping for toys, you know, I don't try to get everything in one place. I don't like the kind of pre-built kits. Like there are several play therapy toy suppliers who have wonderful things, very unique things that you can't get anywhere else. And obviously I do want to support those businesses because they support us. But I personally try not, you know, I shop around. I'm very intentional about what I like and what I want. So I don't try to get everything in one place. I try to take my time. And so, you know, there are some specific things that I like to get at Walmart. I like to check out grocery stores, stores like TJ Maxx or Bargain Hunt. We have a Bargain Hunt here in my town, and you never know what you'll find in there. I know a lot of play therapists love Dollar Tree and Dollar General, and they do have some really good things, but just be mindful. You know, if you're paying a dollar for something, you might want to buy three or four of those things because you might end up replacing it a couple of sessions later because it might not last very long. But there's nothing wrong with...
You don't want too low quality.
Right. Yeah. But some things, you know, are perfectly fine to get there and you get your use out of them, and replacing it's not a big, it's not an issue, but, you do want to be intentional, make a list of kind of what your idea is of what you need. Don't buy everything you see. And in an earlier episode, we were talking about the dollhouse. You know, if, when you think about investing money, sometimes it can be better to wait. You know, wait till those post-Thanksgiving sales that I really want this dollhouse. And I know that Target has a 30% off coupon every year before Christmas. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait on that because that's one of my big purchases. And
or ask for it for Christmas.
Right. Or put it on your list. Maybe, you know, Santa might bring it for you. But yeah, you want to be educated about what you need. Make your list. Don't try to, you know, just take whatever's given to you. And so thinking about, you know, how do I decide what I need in there? Dr. Ray wrote a book called Advanced Play Therapy. And it's kind of the next step, you know, once you've digested Art of the Relationship and you're ready to move forward in your practice a little bit, her book, Advanced Play Therapy, really takes a deep dive into child-centered philosophy and kind of advanced practice issues. And so she talks about asking yourself three questions that I think are really easy to remember. But when I'm thinking about what toy do I need? So what therapeutic purpose is this going to serve? So again, when we think about building a playroom, this is really grounded in your theoretical approach to play therapy. So if I'm setting up a therapeutic space, I need to be very clear on what do I believe about therapy and how it works and what children are doing in here and what I'm doing with them. I speak from a child-centered perspective, but if you're not practicing child-centered, your playroom is going to look different. So the first question is, what therapeutic purpose will this serve? And so we have to understand from our theoretical perspective, our approach to play therapy, therapeutic purposes are going to vary. And so we need to be clear about that. How are children going to use this? How is this going to benefit them? The second question is, how will this help children express themselves? That's the whole goal of play therapy, is to help children communicate with us. So will this allow a child to communicate with us in a way that they're most comfortable with? And then how will this help us build a relationship? So, you know, from a child-centered perspective, the way play therapy works is that it's a healing therapeutic relationship, that the child heals in relationship with us. And so we want toys in the room that facilitate that relationship. So sometimes it means we have two of the same thing. So things like telephones, maybe there's two. So they can have one and I can have one. Or maybe swords. So they can have one and I can have one. So things that facilitate us playing together and building a relationship together. So again, you don't want to, you're not trying to buy everything. You don't just want to go to Walmart and, you know, take one of everything off the shelf. You want to be intentional, and asking yourself those questions.
Yeah. Those are great questions to ask. And they really kind of filter through like, what serves a purpose in the playroom. But even within that context, there still may be more options than a person could afford or even should put in their playroom. And so if we're really kind of focusing in, where would you say that practitioners, maybe on a budget, should really focus their dollars? Like, what are the most important things?
So we did a research study. It's been a while ago, but it's in the International Journal of Play Therapy, and it's called The Use of Toys in Child-Centered Play Therapy. And basically what we did is we looked at, we watched videotapes of sessions, of child-centered play therapy sessions by very well-trained play therapists who were just facilitating a normal session, kids of all ages, kids of all presenting concerns. And we looked at what they played with. We literally just tracked what are they playing with. So we had this idea, you know, Gary Landreth says, here's what needs to be in a playroom. And a lot of other play therapists say, here's what needs to be in a playroom. But we don't really have any real research support for what needs to be in a playroom. So we decided to do this study as kind of a first step into what are children actually playing with? So we give them these options, but are they using them? And so what we did is we looked at everything in the playroom, every toy. We had a list of every single toy that was in the playrooms that these kids were in. And we divided them up. We used Terry Cotman, who's an Adlerian play therapist, but she also has an intro, basic intro to play therapy textbook, where she divides toys into four main, well, five, but we put them into four categories. So this is a roundabout way of saying we want to focus on the categories. So we don't necessarily want to focus on the individual toys. We want to focus on the categories. So if we can't get the whole list, we want to make sure that these categories are covered. So one of them is family and nurturing toys. So like a dollhouse with dolls or a baby doll, food, the kitchen, things that allow us to play out family dynamics, nurturing relationships. The other category is scary and aggressive. So things like weapons, fake weapons, obviously, the bop bag, a rope, maybe scary animals, scary puppets like dinosaurs, sharks, that kind of thing, so that kids have the opportunity to play out aggression if they need a physical release of aggression or some scary themes of things that have happened to them. Expressive toys, so paint, easel, crayons, markers, paper, scissors, glue, those kind of things, not glitter, those kinds of things. And then pretend fantasy toys. So like dress up, puppets, other animals, things that allow them to play out real world things that they've experienced. So what we found is by far sand was the most played with toy by all the kids. Over 72% of the kids of all the sessions that we watched, 72% of those kids played in the sandbox, typically with the sand toys that were in the sandbox. So we're not talking about a sand tray. We're talking about an actual big sandbox that's on the floor in the middle of the floor. So it was very clear to us, sand is really important to kids in play therapy. So that's always on my list. You can have a sandbox, you need a sandbox. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a big wooden sandbox. It can be, you know, plastic, you know, like an under the bed box, you know, that has a little bit of depth to it, but it's big enough. If kids, you know, want to get in it, they could. So the sandbox is really important. But after that, what we saw is there wasn't really anything that most kids played with, that it was more the categories were evenly distributed, that the majority of kids played with things from every category, but there weren't really necessarily specific toys that the majority of kids played with. And so when we go back and look at those lists of things, and the Center for Play Therapy at UNT has a page on their website that has the list straight out of Gary Landreth's Art of the Relationship. So when we're looking at that, those lists of toys, if we can't afford all of them, that's fine. But we want to make sure that we have some from each category. So we want a few expressive, we want a few aggressive, we want a few pretend fantasy and family and nurturing toys. And now we have research to really support that. So that's exciting.
Thank you for bringing in that research. Yeah. So if we have those categories, What would you say, though, might be the most expensive things that most play spaces need? So you mentioned the sandbox. That could potentially be one, but are there any others that you would say are ones that, like, if you're going to invest in something, this would be a good place to place those dollars?
I think, and again, I mentioned this in maybe this one or a previous episode, but this isn't always on the list, but furniture. We think about furniture. So one thing that I always spend the most money on is the kitchen set. So the sink and the stove. And I like to get one that not from the toy aisle at Target, but one that's made for a preschool, one that's made out of real wood. It's solid wood. It's made to last forever. Because I'm not just looking at it as a kitchen sink or stove, that I've had just as many kids climb on the kitchen set, jump off of the kitchen set, move it around the room so they can do something else with it. And I want something sturdy, that a kid that's going to last a long time and a kid's not going to get hurt with it. And it's going to promote that freedom of expression, that it doesn't have to be a kitchen. It can be something else. So furniture is typically, the most expensive. So thinking about the kitchen set, the art table, you know, if you want a good like desk and chair, sometimes that can be expensive. Again, that we're going for the solid wood or something that's made for a school. Like usually when I go into schools, you know, I get one from a classroom. I don't just want, you know, a little plastic one that, you know, might not last that long. Again, from a child centered perspective, that permissiveness, you know, can a child stand up in that chair? Can they stand up on that table? And if they can, I'm going to have to be really clear about the limits of the room, but I want to avoid those limits if I can.
So it's part of safety.
Yes. Yes. So I want good sturdy furniture and same thing for the shelves. So when we think about displaying toys, having some good bookshelves that, you know, if they need to climb on them, they can. They're anchored to the wall, they're solid wood. So that can usually be, you know, quite an investment. But if we think about toys, one I always recommend is the bot bag, the BOA bot bag. So there's a play therapist who also graduated from UNT years before me. She actually started her own company manufacturing bot bags. So as a play therapist, she decided I need a really durable bot bag that's going to last forever. So she had to invent one. And now she sells them. It's bagofair.com is where you can find one. And they're about $200. So they are an investment, but they last a very long time. And there's some smaller ones for smaller kids and bigger ones for bigger kids, but they're very durable. You know, obviously it's a wonderful company to support and give our money to, but that is an investment. So sometimes we might get the $20 one from Amazon until we can save up or wait for that, you know, holiday sale. But that's something that I always recommend play therapists invest in. I also recommend a good puppet theater. Again, one that's sturdy, that's made for a school, because I'm not looking at it as just a puppet theater. It's also a place where kids can hide. They can go behind it if they need separation and space from me. And I've also had kids climb on the puppet theater. And so I guess that's kind of what skews my view of, you know, I worked with a lot of preteen boys who they're very physical. They need to move around a lot. And I don't want, you know, furniture falling over and breaking, that dirty things that kids can use whatever way they need to. So those can be pretty expensive too, if you get a big, nice wooden one. Dollhouses tend to be expensive. But again, I want to invest in one that's neutral. So sometimes that means a wooden dollhouse. It's a neutral color. I've heard some play therapists say they like to have two dollhouses. If they work with a lot of children of divorce or children who move between homes, that having more than one house to play out can be important for them. Those are the main choices. The other thing I wanted to add is recording equipment. So as play therapists, supervision is super important. And really just, you know, the way things are now, I feel a lot of comfort in telling parents, everything I do in that room with your child is recorded. So there's no question as to what's happening. If there's ever an issue, you know, everything's recorded just to make everyone feel safer, but also for supervision purposes. So as a student, you recording everything you do so that you can take it to supervision when you need to and say, here's what happened. I need to process this. I need feedback on this. So having, you know, good quality recording equipment, again, it's not on the list. It's not part of the toys that the children have access to, but definitely something that makes your playroom, you know, more therapeutic.
Yeah. And that's such a great tool even for seasoned play therapy practitioners, because just, you know, often we graduate from school and then we never look back at our skills. And it's such a great way to continuously develop your skills.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you added that to the list. Yeah. Thank you for all those great ideas. And now we've got some good ideas for where to put our dollars towards our play spaces. Yeah. So we'll hear more from you next time. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you so much.
Buying stuff is fun, but you don't need to spend a lot to equip your play space with the essentials. Today, you heard my 5 best tips for funding a playroom. We'll talk more about the must-have toys next time, but the first budget-friendly tip is to start minimal. Tip number 2 is to ask, and that might be tips 3 through 5 as well. Ask your employer or internship site if they will help you with toys and supplies. Tip number 3 is to sketch out your ideal playroom and look for ways for others to help you make it a reality. Community grants, organizations looking for projects, or friends and relatives who want to help can all help you make your ideal playroom a reality. I have known graduate students to ask for playroom toys for Christmas. Just remember to say thank you. Tip number 4 is to buy secondhand items at budget-friendly places. Look for quality and sturdy furniture. And tip number 5 is to shop discount dollar-type stores for the other things you might need, like office supplies, basic art supplies, natural items for the sand, and storage containers to keep you organized. But stay away from the low-quality, easily broken toys. Have you sketched out your ideal play space yet? There are many settings where you might use play therapy. And when you mix in that we are all unique, play spaces are going to be different. Although there isn't an exact right way to set up a playroom, there are certainly things that make it function better for both you and the client. I hope that today's episode helped you improve your play space. If you have ideas, contact us at playtherapypodcast@gmail.com or visit our website at playtherapypodcast.org. You can follow me on Instagram at Play Therapy with Dr. Denise. Remember, I don't have an E at the end of Denise. I appreciate all the subscribers in our Playful Tribe. When you subscribe, it helps others find us too. A big thank you to Dr. Casey Lee, the editing magic of audio engineer Sheldon Clark, production assistant Kara Allison, and songwriter Sarah Beth Go. This podcast is funded through the Lipscomb University Center for Play Therapy and Expressive Arts. I'm your host, Dr. Denise Thomas. Now go play, create, and heal.
You'll get your song again and make happy the trees with the song you sing. You've got so much to say. Broken. Soon you're going to see that you God.